grab a bucket and mop. Scrub the bottom and top. There is nothing so clean as my burger machine. With a broom and a brush, clean it up for the rush. Before you open the door, or to shine on the floor. When we finish one then, start all over again. Tell me, what does it mean? At McDonald's it's clean.
All right, Dave Blair on 720 WGN. The movie The Founder, starring Michael Keaton, focused the spotlight on Ray Kroc, the man who amassed a fortune as the chairman of McDonald's. But what about his wife, Joan, the woman who became famous for giving away his fortune? The new book, Ray and Joan, is quintessentially American tale of corporate intrigue and private passion. A struggling madman era salesman with a vision for a fast food franchise that would become one of the world's most enduring brands, and a woman willing to risk her marriage and her reputation to promote controversial causes that touched her deeply. Ray Kroc was peddling franchises around the country for a fledgling hamburger stand in the 1950s, McDonald's it was called, when he entered a St. Paul supper club and encountered a beautiful young piano player who would change his life forever. Together, the two stories form a compelling portrait of the 20th century, a story of big business, big love, and big giving. Lisa Napoli is the author, and she joins us to share that fascinating story with us this morning. Good morning to you, Lisa.
Hey, good morning.
Let's first talk about Ray Kroc. He was born right here in Oak Park, served our country in World War I, which is amazing to think about. He also worked at a radio station in town.
Yeah, actually, he never served in World War I. He lied about his age so that he could drive ambulance in World War I, but armistice was struck before he was able to serve. And then, yes, he went on to become a paper cup salesman. And as a newly young married man, while he was a salesman, he played radio. He played live piano on the radio at WGS, Oak Park Arms Hotel,
wow.
One of the first radio stations in the country.
That's
and that's
cool.
How music used to be. It was all live.
Right.
He did it at night when he was home from his other job. So, yeah, he worked hard, for sure.
Yeah, you were saying he became a paper cup salesman and eventually a milkshaker mixer salesman for Prince Castles.
Yeah, so while he was running around the Midwest selling paper cups, back when paper cups were revolutionary technology,
right,
that
yeah.
helped you, you know, not get germed up when you were drinking at a soda fountain or something, he met some guys who had created this incredible thing, a multi-spindled milkshake machine mixer. It did six at a time. And that was also revolutionary technology because it allowed you to make six milkshakes and then move the customer away from the counter and serve more customers. So Ray fell in love with that technology and convinced the guys who made that to let him be their salesperson. And that's what he started doing after he was selling paper cups.
Pretty convincing guy in every time,
yeah.
in every part of his life, right?
Yeah. He was a hard-driving, traveling salesman, sort of out of a, like you said, Mad Men era, or even before the Mad Men era. That was his thing, lugging stuff from place to place and convincing people to buy it.
Most of America recognized Ray Kroc as the founder of McDonald's, but it was really an idea from two other entrepreneurs in California that made him famous.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and a lot of people of a certain age don't even remember that Ray Kroc was Mr. McDonald's. But
right.
yeah, for a long time, McDonald's propagated this myth that Ray was the founder. And of course, he wasn't. There were two brothers named McDonald, and they started in the desert of California. And that was back when hamburger stands were popping up all around the country because people were falling in love with their cars. Roads were developing, suburbs were developing, and you know, people had more leisure time and they were running around and they needed something to eat. So hamburger stands were nothing new, but the McDonald brothers had a really cool system that was speedy. It was really fast. It was really cheap, super efficient, and it was good. And Ray fell in love with that system and convinced the brothers to let him sell that.
Well, and they first, I was looking, you know, in reading your book, which was very fascinating, by the way. I mean, there's things that that you think you knew. And the detail in this book on really how this all flowed is pretty incredible. They were first kind of in the theater business. They were selling hot dogs for a while, but then they decided, they were thinking about something where everything cost 10 cents, like a dimer, I think is what they were calling, instead of a diner, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They were very clever. They were hardworking brothers from New Hampshire. Like you said, they come their way west to make it in the movie business, and they didn't. So they were scrambling around for something to do. And yeah, and in the case of McDonald's, they saw a way to eliminate car hops and all an extra labor, extra supplies like glassware that people broke or stole. And they went to paper cups, all tossable stuff. And they made an assembly line system of a hamburger. And that to us now sounds like, okay, so what? Big deal. But it was so what? Big deal when they did it, because no one had done that before. Or if they had, nobody had, repeated it. And that's why Ray thought it was a cool idea, because people wanted fast food that was good. And McDonald's was really good back then, because it wasn't hauled in on a truck frozen from somewhere else. It was just good, locally sourced food. And Ray wanted to sell that blueprint to entrepreneurs, would-be entrepreneurs all around the country, and he did. You paid $950, and for $950, you got a blueprint, basically, for the Golden Arches, those beautiful, that wonderful-looking store that doesn't exist in most places now. You have one in Des Plaines, the original.
Yeah, I was going to say original. Speedy. Speedy was the mascot, so to speak, because he was the Speedy service system. So, the arches weren't really the first thing you saw in the early McDonald's. Yeah.
Right. There was that cute little character.
Yeah.
And then later came the arches. And if you bought into the system, you got this manual, really, that told you what kind of food to order and how to make it. But you didn't have to spend money buying hamburger patties from the corporation. And, that's what Ray was selling in the very earliest days.
Was Ray the first person to approach the McDonald's brothers to franchise, or was he the one that was successful doing it?
That's it. He was the guy who made it happen. I mean, there had been another fellow, and he had health issues, and the brothers really didn't want to sell. They knew that selling was a hassle, and they knew that once you took one idea and made another store, policing it and keeping up the standards and the cleanliness that made the first one so good was not an easy nut to crack. And Ray didn't mind doing that. The brothers were content with the money they were making, and they reluctantly franchised. And they had about 9 stores by the time Ray came along.
Yeah.
And so they sold that blueprint a couple of times, but they really weren't, their head wasn't in the idea of dominating the universe like Ray wanted to.
And Ray wanted to get Earl Prince and Walter Ruddenhagen, which is of Prince Castle's Cock Robin here in Chicago, but they thought it was too risky. He opened his first McDonald's right here in Des Plaines, but he eventually bought out the McDonald's brothers. But how did that work, and did they get their fair share?
Well, a lot of people in this movie sort of perpetuates that, say that they didn't get their fair share, but if a bunch of people start a business together, or if they're in business together, and two people just, basically Ray was hard driving, the brothers were tired of him. They asked Ray for $2.7 million to walk away from the business. And Ray needed them to walk away for the business to keep growing, because he was leveraged to the hilt. And to keep borrowing money, he had to kind of cut the brothers out of the equation, because they were getting 0.5% royalty, and they had very strict rules in their relationship. So Ray needed them to go away. The brothers were ready to go away.
That was a lot of money back then. I mean, it's a lot of money now, but it's a lot of money back then.
It's a lot of money. And so Ray didn't have the money, and his finance guy, Harry Sonneborn, who was the first president of McDonald's Corporation, went out, raised the money, and gave the guys the check, and they walked away, and they were very happy with it. They were not unhappy. The movie makes them sound like they were. So they got good money out of it, and they were older at the time, So, but nobody knew. I mean, it's important to remember that in the 60s, the early 60s, Ray Kroc thought if we could have 1,000 stores, that would be incredible. And now there are tens of thousands of stores all around the world. So nobody really had a sense of it in that earliest day of just how big or dominant or how enduring it would be.
Well, when we come back, the story between Ray and his third wife, Joan, and the fortune she gave away. The new book, Ray and Joan, next on 720 WGN.
Beef patties, pickles, sauce, lettuce, cheese,
and
this.
Pickles,
no.
Pickles, cheese.
Oh. Lettuce and onion, sesame, all seed bun.
I think they're describing a bit.
To all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun.
Say that again.
To all beef patties, special sauce.
All right, it's Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to author Lisa Napoli about her new book, Ray and Joan Kroc, The Man Who Made McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. Joan, Ray was in full control about how McDonald's operated. He was married a couple of times and was when he met his future and third wife, Joan.
Yeah, that's the other, you know, there's business drama here, and then there's romantic drama. And Ray met Joan while he was peddling franchises. She was married, too. It took him 12 years and another wife for Ray before they finally did get married.
Wow.
And once they did, that was quite dramatic, too. She was 26 years younger. They began their life in Chicago. They lived on Lakeshore Drive. By then, he was super, super mega rich because McDonald's had gone public in 1965. And he went from struggling businessman to fantastically wealthy businessman. But, yeah, they had quite an incredible life together, quite dramatic.
Were they truly in love? Because, as you said, Ray became a very wealthy man at the time and, you know, she was married, he was married, it took 12 years to make this happen. Was it really love, as far as you know?
Well, you know, all the people I talked to who knew them well, who knew them both together, said that they had a long passion. It was an intense passion. It was a fiery passion. Her daughter, from her first marriage, likened it to that of Liz and Dick. You know, very Dick Burton, Liz Taylor. Fiery is the best way to describe it. Mm-hmm. And I think that she clearly had a chance. I mean, she's a beautiful woman. She could have run off with other men. But I think that there was something about Ray that really compelled her to be with him. And it's easy to say that it was just about the money.
Sure.
But I don't think it was just that. He certainly was completely taken by her from the minute he met her. So.
Now, people, you know, like you know now, you know, McDonald's is food that's not fabulous for you, but it's fast, quick, cost effective. It didn't sit well with others. And in 72, you mentioned Ray grandly announced that he was giving some donations out of $7.5 million, you know, because he felt like a little bit that maybe, you know, the reputation for his restaurant, his food wasn't fabulous. He was giving money to the zoo, the planetarium, the hospital, prison education program. He really started delving out some money. Did he give out money because at the time he wanted to or because he had to because of that situation?
You know, there's this thing with rich people. There's a tax shelter. It looks good if you donate to all the things you just mentioned, you know, your civic pride. And yeah, of course, it's hopefully going to offset the stuff that you're doing or the stuff your company's doing that isn't so great.
Yeah, right.
And that's sort of, you know, for me, having studied this for 5 years, it seems to me that that's what was going on for Ray. I think he felt a sense of genuine, you know, amazement that he was so fantastically wealthy and some sense of generosity, especially toward the people who'd helped him become wealthy. But, you know, it's nothing like what happened with his wife, who was unbridled philanthropy, whereas Ray seemed always more calculated.
Yeah, and he was a political donor. He created the Ronald McDonald House, of course. He had a significant interest in baseball teams, other businesses. She lived pretty large herself. He died in 84, and Joan died almost 20 years later. To put this in perspective, she was in control of distributing Ray's wealth, so to speak. It was a $500 million estate.
She got $500 million when he died in 1984, but by the time she died in 2003, it was $3 billion. And, she really went wild with his money in the sense that she gave it away in random acts of kindness and benevolence, often in response to things she saw in the news that tugged at her heartstrings. and she'd sort of swoop in on her private plane and save the day, often anonymously. And then there were very calculated giving, too. There was the Alcoholism Education Charity she started because Ray was an alcoholic.
Yeah, before Betty Ford almost, right? I mean, before Betty Ford really, you know, did her thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Betty Ford was a recipient of Joan's generosity when she came out as an alcoholic. But before that, Joan was making films and publishing books, all in the name of getting people who were living with alcoholics to understand what the problem was, that it was a disease, that it could be helped, how a person could cope with someone who was a drinker. So she was really very inspired in the way she gave, in the way she took the McDonald's money and turned it back into the community in a way that was really meaningful.
And of course, some big gives. And I remember when these happened, when they were in the news, you know, the Salvation Army, NPR, received large amounts of money. It was $250 million, I think, for the Salvation Army. And then St. Jude's Habitat for Humanity. But Joan also gave away Ray's money to causes which he might not have approved. Am I right?
Yeah, no, and it's important to point out that she actually gave $1.6 billion to the Salvation Army.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think it was in chunks, okay. Though, wasn't it?
No, it was $2.5 that went to NPR, and then $1.6 once it was all told to the Salvation Army to build recreation centers in poor communities all around the country. Like, you have one on the south side of Chicago that is a palace to physical fitness, and it's a low cost to join. And they've transformed the neighborhoods where they've been built. There have been 26 of them built. And I was at the opening on the one in the south side of Chicago. It's a beautiful, beautiful facility. So that was her biggest posthumous gift. And the one to NPR, $225, I think it was $235 once it was said and done and distributed, million. Those things were not necessarily things that Ray would have done with the money, especially the NPR gift, because, you know, people see NPR as super liberal, depending on your political leanings, and Ray was super conservative. But Joan was investing in peace institutes. She was a major advocate of the peace movement, the No Nukes movement in the 80s, and she invested heavily in that. She built a peace center at Notre Dame and another one at University of San Diego, that are beautiful places where people come from all around the world to study peace and mediation and things that Ray probably wouldn't have plunked down his money on himself.
Did Joan have more fun giving away the money, you think, than actually being married to Ray? Because really, that was the last 20-plus years of her life, jetting around and giving away cash.
Definitely. I think it was sort of like that TV show, The Millionaire. You know, how could it not be? You'd have to be a really heartless, terrible person not to think that it was fun. But what I love is that she lived large herself, too. She didn't live like a monk by any stretch of the word. Right. She had enough money to live really well and to help other people. And to me, wow, what could be better than that, right? I mean,
right.
And the fact that it all came from McDonald's is kind of ironic, and Robin Hood, and fabulous.
I've got a couple texters, 312. I remember years ago reading about Ray Kroc and he loved the McDonald's French fries but couldn't figure out how to get the same taste out of them when he opened up his Desplaines store. So he called the Potato Growers Association to find out that McDonald's brothers were storing their potatoes in a shed in their parking lot with chicken wire, so the potatoes were drying out to a certain humidity in Southern California. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, the other night in San Bernardino, where the brothers started, I met the woman whose father helped them come up with that formula to make the fries, to make the perfect fry.
Wow.
And of course, then what happened was that Ray, so disappointed in the inconsistency, ultimately commissioned the development of a frozen fry, which of course defeated the purpose of a fabulous fry,
right.
You know, from the cage in the back. But yeah, you can't, that was the whole thing. You know, he loved the idea. But reality is, you can't make, you know, even if I come make you dinner tomorrow night, I'm never going to make that same dinner exactly the same way again.
Right.
And that was the problem with franchising. But Ray wanted it to be that way, to be more homespun. It just in reality didn't translate.
And then 331 Tony says, when did Ronald McDonald come on the scene? That was Willard Scott, I think, from NBC's Today Show, right? That played. He was playing Bozo, and he also created Ronald McDonald.
Yes, you're so right. Yeah. He was a guy like you. He was a radio guy. He was reading local announcements. One of them was for the local franchisee.
So you're saying I'm a clown. You're saying I'm a clown. That's what you're saying.
I'm not. No, I swear. I'm not. No. He wasn't a clown yet.
Yeah.
No, but he was a broadcaster, and he was reading local announcements, and they canceled the Bozo show, which he got to do because he was the younger of the announcers.
In D.C.
And he helped the McDonald's guys locally come up with another clown because kids loved clowns.
Yeah.
And he called it Ronald McDonald. Yeah, but he didn't get to play it nationally. But he worked. It worked out okay for him.
It did. And now McDonald's serves approximately, look at this, 68 million customers daily in 119 countries in 36,615 outlets. And the rest is history. The new book is Ray and Joan Kroc, The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and The Woman Who Gave It All Away. So many great stories. We just touched upon a few of them. It's a great read. Pick it up wherever books are sold. Lisa, thanks for joining us this morning. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa.